Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Pamela Miles, and we're going to be talking about blessed boundaries. When Pamela Miles was 11, she asked her mother for a book about yoga. When she opened the book, the direction of her life shifted imperceptibly and irrevocably. It set her on a lifelong path to find methods of natural healing for herself and others. Her pursuits took her from yoga to vegetarianism, to self-hypnosis, to botanicals, to meditation, and even to 2 years in an Indian monastery. Soon people began to flock to her for ways to feel better and happier, using the simple shifts that she offered, impacting them spiritually, mentally, emotionally, socially, and physically. Her career unfolded from there as she assumed a leadership role in the introduction of meditation to her generation of Americans, and then became one of the leading pioneers in Reiki, bringing that spiritual practice to the mainstream medical community. She has collaborated with prestigious healthcare institutions on care, education, and research, including the National Institutes of Health and such prestigious medical schools as Harvard and Yale, along with top New York City hospitals. Pamela has been interviewed by a wide range of media, including NBC, CNN, Fox, Allure, U.S. News and World Report, and Dr. Oz. In her ongoing private practice, both virtually and in person, on New York's Upper West Side, Pamela realized that a major obstacle to personal success and peace of mind is her clients' failure to set appropriate boundaries. Thus was born her quest to find a methodology to help people set blessed boundaries with grace, skill, and compassion. Her unique online program, which is you can access at www.myblessedboundaries.com, has been transforming lives and winning accolades. You can also find out more about Pamela by visiting her website, which is PamelaMiles.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Pamela to the show. Good day, Pamela.
Hello, Robert.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about blessed boundaries. I think like many people, sometimes we have challenges with those boundaries, and it's always good to know exactly how to handle that.
Yes, I mean, most people could use some help with boundaries, and I don't know. It just seems to be a universal situation, although I think some cultures do better with it than Americans do. What do you think?
Okay. Well, I guess I'm really don't know more. You know, I'm not such an international traveler, but I, you know, I think that it's just maybe there are cultural tendencies, you know, the things, because do you think boundaries are a learned kind of belief that we get?
You know, I don't think it is learned, although we can learn to improve for sure, but I think that our boundaries are really a function of our state. You know, when we're aligned with ourselves in a very deep way, our boundaries are very clear and not abrasive. It's just who we are, you know, that there's a sense of integrity in the person, that everything's headed in the same direction. And when we're not deeply aligned with ourselves, then it's impossible to have clear boundaries because we just don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, let's start first of all by, if we wouldn't mind, I mean, we've been talking a couple of seconds here about boundaries. So can you, for the listeners who maybe not have a clear idea of, you know, exactly how to even know what boundaries are, can you kind of give a little bit of an idea of, you know, exactly how we can even identify, you know, boundaries that we may have?
Well, we can know if our boundaries are good by how good we feel being ourselves. You know, if we're defensive, if we're self-critical, if we fear confrontation, if we find that we don't listen to ourselves, you know, that our gut is saying no, 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 and our mouth says, okay, yes. If we're contradicting ourselves or we feel overwhelmed, we feel like we've bitten off more than we can chew, or we find that at the end of the day we're just so exhausted, we have nothing left to enjoy ourselves with, and maybe that we're not able
perfect.
To sleep well enough.
Yeah, that's perfect, because I think listeners out there probably can identify with any one or maybe multiple situations that you just kind of stated. So that's great to be able to identify when the boundaries aren't working. So let's go ahead and why improve? I mean, why should we work toward strengthening and adding clarity to what our boundaries are?
Because we want to be happy and healthy, and we want other people to be happy and healthy. We don't want to inflict unnecessary suffering on people. You know, and we don't want to be distracted from what's important in life. That's one of the things that boundaries do, is they, you know, they come out of our priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, our first priority is our self-care. Because if we don't take care of ourselves, then somebody else has to. If we don't take good care of ourselves, we don't have much to give to other people. We don't have much to bring to our relationships. We don't have much to express in the world to bring benefit to others.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you said about you know, being happy for ourselves and others, I think at times people may be reluctant to set their boundaries or you know, enforce their boundaries because of the fear or the avoidance of trying to hurt someone else's feelings. So one of the things I noticed as part of your program is the compassionate side of boundary setting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. I mean, boundaries are compassionate. You know, when we don't have boundaries, when we're not clear, that's when we wind up hurting people. And when we're clear and we're kind in articulating our boundaries, we don't hurt their feelings. We don't have to reject the person in order to say no to some proposal that they've made. And when people aren't confident holding their boundaries, when they wait until they feel like they're pushed against the wall and they're really being imposed on, and then they react, you know, in a snippy, unkind way, or it becomes combative, or they say yes, but then they undermine it somehow, you know, they don't show up, or they're late, or there's resentment. That's unkind. You know, saying to somebody, well, I really appreciate you thinking of me, but that's not really my cup of tea. But thanks, let's get together. Shall we look at another date? You know, I mean, what's unkind about that? So just realizing that all of us are in the same situation. We're all human beings with all of the uncertainty and insecurity that can bring, and being kind to the person while we are truthful about how we choose to spend our time and our money.
Yeah. So I agree with you there. So when we are honest and straightforward and, you know, kind of maybe indicate that maybe an opportunity or a suggestion made by someone else isn't really what we want to do, but we turn it down in a kind way, you know, kind of a very straightforward, honest, and kind, and yet the other person feels, you know, rejected, maybe doesn't take kindly, you know, to that, to your setting of the boundaries. Is at that point, should we just rest confident in the fact that we are stating our authenticity?
You know, I think there's not a one size fits all here. A lot depends upon our relationship with the person. If it's a friend, then we might be able to get playful and say, "Oh, did I hurt your feelings? You know, you're looking a little downcast. I'm sorry. That's not what I wanted to do. I just, you know, I don't like that restaurant. Can we go someplace else that we both like?" You know, you can talk your way through it. If somebody is combative, be careful of being drawn into combat. You know, sometimes the best thing you can do is to just be quiet, to kind of stand your ground once you have communicated kindly, and then exit the situation.
Okay.
We can't make everybody happy. You know, if people are determined not to be happy, there's nothing we can do. Even if we go along with them, Robert, if they're not happy, there's going to be another problem. So why not just kind of call it the way it is now?
I agree, and you know, that's just the perfect way of handling that. You know, I know that for me in the past, you know, I've been known to be drawn into conflict, and it's just not my style, you know. And then when I find out that here I am reacting when, you know, it's for me, the much better solution was to remove myself from the situation and, you know, and allow the person to feel however they want, you know. But as long as I did it, you know, in a nice way, which is typically the way, you know, I handle things. But, you know, so for me, that was one of my challenges, you know, regarding boundaries that I've learned through the years to be able to do that.
Yeah, you know, we can't take responsibility for how people receive what we say if we've done our best to communicate kindly and to be acknowledging and respectful of the person, you know, to separate the person from the proposition and decline one while acknowledging the other. If somebody needs more than that, that's a problem waiting to erupt.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I agree, and it is a good point that, you know, to basically nip it in the bud. I mean, otherwise, because if you continue down that path, it's going to be a repeated type of pattern that, you know, that is only going to make you unhappy. You know, if you keep giving in to it.
We're attracting bullies then, you know. Because bullies only go after people who have a hard time saying no. You know, bullies intimidate people who have unclear boundaries. But if you have a clear boundary and you walk around with that kind of presence, a bully's not going to come after you for anything, because bullies don't pick on people that are a match for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've seen in recent days how bullies can, you know, how they act, you know. I mean, and it's when we look at, you know, in today's environment with, I've had several guests on recently who work with children, you know, in the area of cyberbullying and that kind of thing, you know, and it's, you know, it's sad that some children today aren't empowered enough to recognize, you know, recognize their boundaries and kind of put the bully, you know, in their place.
Yeah, we can't wait for the bully to change his or her behavior. We have to change our behavior. And
exactly.
Then
okay.
if the bully runs up to that kind of no thank you, you know, very clearly declining the interaction, if that happens enough, then the bully, you know, has a chance of figuring it out. But you can't teach somebody who doesn't want to learn, right, Robert?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So one of the things you talk about in your program is the idea of boundary moments. Can you explain to the listeners what a boundary moment is?
Yes, and I think everybody will recognize it really quickly. It's one of those times when we feel that someone is trespassing, and we need to assert our boundaries. And we often feel not quite up to the task. You know, we may feel intimidated. Sometimes people start to feel anxious, or they may even have, you know, their heart might start racing. They might start to feel spacey. You know, some people just kind of vacate. Their bodies are there, but they're gone. And none of those are very healthy responses in the sense that we're letting go of any control over the outcome. So in those boundary moments, you know, it's good if we have some rehearsed skills that we can bring to those boundary moments and turn it around, get back to ourselves so we can be present and we can stay in a place of making choices.
Yeah, so when we have that, those circumstances where we recognize that someone's trespassing on our boundaries, making us feel anxious or uncomfortable, or we know that there is some, you know, they're kind of pushing us to a place we don't want to be. In those moments, you know, that's when we have those, that particularly boundary moment. So you're saying how do you rehearse to be prepared for a moment that you may not know specifically what's coming? Is it just a general type of response to that intrusion? Like if I feel intruded upon, that this is what I'm going to do?
You know, there's a two-part strategy. One is to rehearse some possible responses in the moment. And the other is to commit yourself to a daily spiritual practice. And that can be any practice that you enjoy doing, you know, a meditation, yoga, Reiki, Qigong, those are some of the more common ones, but, you know, it could be contemplative prayer. It could be walking mindfully. I mean, there are really so many possibilities, but every day to have some time that you just spend with your mind. You get to know your mind. You start watching the things that you think. And realizing that you are not your mind. You're the being who is having those thoughts. And you can choose to believe those thoughts or not. You know, I often tell my my clients, please don't believe everything you think. You know, We want to read our minds with the same kind of critical thinking that we watch TV advertising with. You know, we know that the person who's hawking that product on the TV doesn't really have our best interests at heart, you know.
Yeah,
and sometimes our minds don't have our best interests at heart. They're just being bratty. And we need to be able to discern that and to intervene, you know, to be with our breath, to back up from the thought and realize we have choice.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So, it does. You know, my moment of zen every day, every morning is my little nature walk. I walk a few miles every morning, and that's my time where I'm in my zone. And I do notice that there will be times I'll have that monkey talk, that monkey chatter that goes on in my head that is like, okay, you know, I have to consciously quiet that, you know, and for me, being in nature is a great way to do that. And I can see, for me, that, you know, that daily practice gets me kind of in tune with what I need to do for the day, you know, what's important for me. I mean, there's just a whole lot of connection, you know, that kind of lead for the better. And I can see where having that connection then becomes important. So throughout the day, if someone is trying to trespass on my boundaries, I'm already in a state where I can combat that. So is that kind of the idea of having that connection, how it works?
Yes, to have some time of retreat, you know, like a daily retreat. And it doesn't have to be long, you know, but it does have to happen. Sometime when we are just with ourselves in an environment like nature, I mean, is wonderful, but that's not always accessible to people.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of being, breathing, being with our awareness, and coming into alignment with ourselves. Because when we're aligned with ourselves, our boundaries are quite clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. If you were to say that there was maybe one most important boundary that we should really focus on, the first one, what would that be?
The first one would be the boundary between us and overwhelm. We cannot allow ourselves to become overwhelmed because no one has made a good decision when they're overwhelmed, right? So when we start to feel that overwhelm coming into our state, we need to set a boundary to stop then, to intervene, to align with ourselves. So in a sense, you could say that your first boundary is your self-care. You know, that we prioritize our self-care first. And then we have, you know, daily self-care, but we also have that ongoing priority that when we start to lose it, and, you know, it happens to all of us. It just happens. You know, sometimes we're tired or too many things have come at us in a day for whatever reason, and we're not as poised inwardly as we usually are, you know, as we like to be, and we can feel that we're losing it. So you don't want to wait until you've lost it.
Been there. I know. It's not a happy place. Yeah.
But the more that we spend some time with ourselves each day and are aware of our state, the more likely we are to notice when something starts imposing on our state while we can still address it gracefully.
Yeah.
Which is
good,
what we
good
want.
Good point. Yeah, good point. And you know, in today's society, you know, getting overwhelmed can happen so quickly and easily that it's really important to, I think, just be so very conscious of when you're even starting to head down that road.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Manhattan in New York City. I know, you know, overwhelm is never far away.
Oh, I know. I've visited there a few times, originally from upstate New York, but I've gone into the city a few times, and I just, I mean, it just, the energy there just, I kind of short circuit when I'm there. But it's pretty intense, no doubt.
Yeah, and it's even more intense when you don't live here, because when you live here,
yeah.
You know, like anything else, you develop a grounding, you develop your home base, and you start to find your allies in your neighborhood, because New York is really just a sequence of neighborhoods, you know. So finding
right.
that way to set the boundary of overwhelm. For me, one of the things that I do regularly is I go to farmers markets at least a couple times a week. I'll go to the farmers market even if I don't need anything. I'll just go get out of the house to walk, to get my, I call it my dose of farmer, you know, just to be around people who are actually farmers. I mean, what a wonderful way to live, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I spent most of my adult life in California, and you know, L.A. and Long Beach. And right now, I'm located in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So I mean, roadside produce stands everywhere. You know, during the summer, and so I'm really do enjoy that dose of farmer. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now it can go. It can, the pendulum can swing the other way. You can have too much farmer sometimes. But for me, it's everything in balance. You know, I think is
yes.
important. So.
That's really the operative word, Robert, balance, you know? And people look at balance as if it's something that you impose. And it's not. It's something that you evoke. You know, it's not a balance of opposites. It's a balance in a multidimensional space. It's a balance that can only be found within us. And when we find that balance through our spiritual practice and then we keep supporting it, then we know in any given moment what is the action or the direction to go in that will restore balance, if possible, or when is it just time to leave?
Yeah, exactly. We're almost halfway through the show, so I want to just invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Pamela any question, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you would like for me to pose to Pamela, feel free to type them in, and we'll get to those after the break. But before we go to the break, what is one thing that people can do differently that may have the most impact, you know, when it comes to, you know, boundaries in that self-care aspect?
I would say, other than having a daily spiritual practice, checking in with your body often throughout the day.
Mm.
And there are three large muscle groups in the body that are easy to access and flex or clench. And within a minute, you can shift your state from being spaced out or fearful or anxious to feeling much more grounded and present in your body. And, I mean, people could even do it right now because it's really very fast. The first is the glutes, the muscles we sit on. And when we flex them, when we clench them, we just get higher in our chair. The other is the quads, which sit on the top when you're sitting and your knees are out, you know, your feet are flat on the floor. The quads are on the top of our thighs. So if you place your hands lightly on your thighs and then first the right leg and then the left leg, you kind of press your heel into the floor, that will usually engage the quads and you can feel it. And then the other muscle group is the hamstrings. Little harder to reach, they're behind the thigh, the bottom of the thigh, but even still, if you think of dragging your heel toward your butt or your chair, but resist that, don't actually move it, just head in that direction, play with it a little bit. You'll feel that it engages the hamstrings, and you can do, you know, the right leg, the left leg, back and forth two or three times. And already, if anybody's been doing it, I know you're feeling different, and that's so easy. You can do it when you're sitting, but also, you know, when you have done it a few times, you'll get so you can do it when you're standing or walking, too. I love to walk down Broadway and clench my butt. Now you know my secret.
Oh my! Well, I think on that note, no, it's a good time for. Well, you know, I was actually, you know, doing as you were explaining that testing it, and it's great. I'm going to be practicing that for sure. So, I'm not sure about the walking part. No, I'll do that too. We're going to go ahead and take a break. It's only going to be about a 90-second break. But when we come back, I'd like to maybe cover what would be the first step that people might take to improve their boundaries, okay?
Okay.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Again, thank you for staying with us. My very special guest today is Pamela Miles, and we're talking about Blessed Boundaries. And again, you can find out more about her unique online program by going to www.myblessedboundaries.com. And you can also find out more about the other programs and services that Pamela offers by visiting her website, which is PamelaMiles.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back. Pamela?
Yes, let's keep going.
Yay! Let's keep going. Okay. Before the break, I mentioned about what the first step to improve your boundaries, and as I did indicate in the show description, that you have 7 tips to building blessed boundaries. So maybe if we could talk about a couple of those tips that would get people started and building those strong boundaries.
Sure, and in terms of the first step, Robert, we just did that before we broke, that body flex. You know,
Get
present in your body, because your body has natural boundaries and very clear boundaries. And when we feel boundary challenged, when we're starting to feel intimidated, we kind of move away from the body. You know, we get withdrawn, or we get spacey, you know, and so just the first thing to do is to clench those muscles. It brings you right back into your body. You're feeling grounded and clear and not combative, just solid.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very important, and I really like that that muscle exercise, because that's, you know, it seems that once you get your body, you know, in a relaxed kind of balanced state, that, you know, the emotions and everything else just follows suit.
Yes, I agree with you. The body is really key.
Absolutely. So how about a couple tips here to build some boundaries?
So I have 7 tips to help people to experience and uphold their own blessed boundaries. You know, I think it's really our social and spiritual and ethical obligation to hold our boundaries. We can't expect other people to do it for us. So these are tips to make it easier. And one of them is, drum roll please, to remove the word should from your vocabulary. Or at least whenever you hear yourself say it, and you might find now that I've mentioned it that you say it more than you realize, really ask yourself, what's that about? Because if it's a should that is an ethical imperative, you know, like people should be able to die in peace, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely understandable. But if it's the kind of shoulding of oneself that we too easily get engaged in and undermine our own boundaries, like, oh, I don't want to do this, but I should be a better friend. I shouldn't hurt her feelings. I should go along with authority. You know, that kind of should.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
You know, it is really interesting because, when we say that to ourselves, now I have a friend whose mother is constantly shooting him, you know, I never really paid much attention to should, you know, because I have them, I say it every now and then, but when I was in the presence of the two of them, I was stunned, you know. I mean, to me, it was a constant, well, you should do this and you should do that, and I'm like, oh my God, you know,
right.
Where is this coming from, you know, and so. We do it to ourselves, but also we're sometimes bombarded by people saying what we should or should not do.
And what we can say is, how would you know what I should do? Do you see the world from where I'm sitting? You know, because anybody who deems to tell another person what they should do really doesn't understand the situation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in that particular case, I mean, for me, it was clear that this was a mother with a certain set of beliefs where, you know, it's a lot of it had to do with this, you know, old time South, you know, with a child who is certainly more progressive in thoughts. So, I mean, it's like almost a conflict of cultures in a way.
A lot of moralizing, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. So I'm going to make sure to empower him with what you said. So remove the word should. Okay, so that's a great tip.
And another is making self-care your primary priority. I mentioned it earlier. And I really cannot highlight it or underline it or, you know, put it in neon that's quite bright enough, because people often have a kind of reflexive, you know, knee-jerk reaction to that. No, that's selfish. And I would say that's enlightened selfishness. There are things that only we can do for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, even if somebody else could do them for us, we'd rather they not. You know, we really would rather take care of ourselves. And we are very clear about those needs when it comes to our physical needs. And I encourage people to think of their spiritual needs with as much practicality as they think of their physical needs, because we need better mental hygiene in this culture. You know, it's starting to happen. I mean, it's certainly much more obvious now, much more accessible now than it was when I started meditating, you know, when I was a kid. I mean, I don't know why I ever got into that, but I'm really glad I did, because it's made it possible for me to be healthy and happy and productive. And, you know, if we kind of don't get that spiritual self-care, that relationship with our mind in a good position in our lives, it can just undermine anything else we try to do. We don't have clear perspective. You know, it's like, take care of your state, and your state will take care of everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that self-care is, it's just so important. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you're not healthy, like, for example, with, you know, parents who have children that they're, you know, they're caring for, a lot of times self-care will take a back seat, you know, to care for the children. But, you know, a healthy parent, you know, a very spiritually and physically healthy parent is so much more important, you know, to be able to raising healthy children, you know, that it's, you know, it's kind of like that it's not selfish to do it. A lot of times people think, you know, that it's selfish to do it, but it's key. I mean, you know, if you're not healthy, then you're not going to be able to, you know, effectively or, you know, provide for your family.
And your children won't feel your love. You know, we have to be aligned with ourselves. We have to feel good about ourselves for somebody else to be able to feel that love. And then that's what kids really need. You know, when they feel that love, then they can deal with it when we say, no, you can't do that, you know, and we have to hold a boundary.
Yeah.
But if they don't feel that love, they're much more likely to push back.
Yeah. And also, you know, by taking care of oneself, you also set a good role, you become a good role model for children to recognize how important it is for them to take care of themselves. You know, I mean, you know, it becomes very important in that modeling process.
Yeah, we give kids time out, but we don't tell them what to do with the time out, and we make it a punishment. Instead of like, well, I can see you're really not feeling so good right now, so why don't you go to your room for a few minutes and collect yourself so you'll feel better. You know, it's so funny how we've turned it into a punishment instead of an opportunity to get yourself right with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. You might hear I have a storm here in the background. So if I happen to lose you, I'll call you right back. So it just you know, it's we're here in the South. We get thunderstorms almost every day now during this period. As far as tips, we had remove the word should, make self-care a primary priority. And how about one more? And then if people want all seven, they can go to your website and take the course and get an intensive introduction to all seven types of tips.
Okay, and I also gave the one about how to engage your body to support your boundaries. So we've had an extra one, one more, which is a simple thing that we can do that immediately shifts the power in any interaction. And it's the last thing you would ever think of doing, and that is to slow down. Because the person who is most deliberate, who is most centered, who is not letting the urgency of the situation, you know, put them off guard, is the one who has the power in the interaction.
Oh, that's clever.
Like, think of a salesperson, you know, if they're really trying to push a sale, they start talking fast, right? They start moving fast. Mm-hmm. It's like this, you know, rat. And all you have to do is just let it go over your shoulder and start talking really slowly and looking them in the eye. And it communicates, you're not going to get your way here, but I'm also not making you my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I respect you. I'm just not getting on board with your proposal.
Yeah, that's great. I will be employing that one, that's for sure. But, you know, and like you say, in some cases it seems counterintuitive, but that's the whole point, really, is that you kind of disengage from that whole frenetic type of interaction that's going to be happening.
Right. You shift gears and put yourself in the driver's seat. And, you know, it's funny that phrase counterintuitive always catches me, because I think what people really mean to say is it's not what I would have thought. But if we're accessing our intuition, you know, that takes us beyond what we would have thought to the inspiration in the moment. You know, the solution is never what we would have thought, or we would have done it already.
Now, see, there you go. You've forever shifted my view of counterintuitive. I'll probably never use that again. Thanks.
My job is done.
Well, that's what I love about the show. I always learn something new. But that is a very excellent point, so that's definitely one I'm going to take away from today's show. Okay, so those are some, you know, great tips for people to help build blessed boundaries. And again, they can find out more about your program at your website. One of the things that you talk about or that you have in the program is there's something called the inner terrorist. Can you talk a little bit about what that is? I think I might have a couple inside me.
We all know what it feels like, you know, because it's that part of us that snipes at us, that part of us that pulls the rug out from under us, you know, the part of us that is sure we're wrong no matter what. It doesn't give us the benefit of the doubt, and it is the part of us that just keeps undermining us. And it is something that we need to notice when it's happening, and we need to set boundaries. You know, we need to back up from the mind, you know, and realize that these are just thoughts. And like I said before, don't believe everything you think. These are just thoughts. And we don't even have to get into where they came from, you know, oh, it's my mother, it's my father, it's my culture, it's, you know, my religion, whatever people always have. It doesn't matter. We don't have to get psychoanalytic about it. It's like, this is not helpful. This is not helpful, and you probably cannot stop it in the moment, but you can see it for what it is. And in the same way as, if a two-year-old, you know, if you were having an interaction with a two-year-old and the two-year-old said, I hate you, you're just poopy, you know, you're not going to let that throw you, are you?
No, that would just kind of laugh at it, which is really what we should do, right? Just laugh at it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Just take the intensity out of it. You know, there I go again.
Yeah.
And laughter, of course, is such great medicine. Laughter puts us back in perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you think of terrorists, you think of fear, you know, and, you know, kind of laughing in the face of fear is really one way to disarm that almost immediately. You know, I think that's just something to remember when it comes up. And I truly like the the point that you made of it's not really important where it comes from. I mean, the fact that it's there and just deal with it and disarm it and not allow it to affect, you know, your life, your happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, one of the things also in your program is that you use heart writing. And I'm kind of going through things real quickly, but I really want the listeners to get a kind of an idea of the breadth of the program and the different things that you offer. So can you talk a little bit about heart writing?
I would love to. You know, writers often use something that they call free writing, which is just writing automatically, either, you know, with a pen or pencil, or you can do it on a computer, probably even your handheld device if you're that fast. But it's like stream of consciousness writing, you know, it's spontaneous. You're not composing. You're not worrying about grammar. You're not worrying about spelling. And you may not even read it, because it's about the process rather than the finished product. So what I've done is I've coupled free writing with spiritual practice. And the process is that we take a few minutes, you know, it can be 5 minutes, it can be 15 minutes, whatever people need to shift their state, to drop into their heart. And they can practice Reiki if they're Reiki trained, or they can meditate. And if they don't know how to meditate, I give them a recorded meditation that they can listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel your state drop into your heart, then you open your eyes just enough to grab whatever you're going to write with. And each day I give people a prompt, and they start writing from that prompt. So the prompt is just a couple of words so that you're not facing a blank sheet, you know, it's like a diving board, and you dive into your heart writing experience, and you set a timer for 15 minutes is a good amount of time, but it can be shorter if it has to be. And the thing is, you write until the timer goes off, and you don't critique what you're writing. You don't try to figure it out. Heart writing can often take unexpected twists and turns. It may seem like it's not making any sense. It doesn't have to make sense. And then at the end, like in the last minute or two, often it comes together in a very interesting way that brings a lot of insight and even release. You know, people have shared that they found themselves writing about something they would not have expected to write about, and that they wound up seeing it from an entirely different perspective and letting go of some pain that they'd been carrying. So we do that each day, and people do that at home on their own whenever they can, and their heart rate is for them alone. We never share that because we want to be uninhibited, completely uninhibited in that. But then whenever people have a chance, they can come online. There's a private part of my website that we keep for this program, and there is a page for each day where people share about their experience of heart writing that day, how they felt about the prompt, an insight that they got, or whatever they want to share. And then they read other people's sharings, and I'm in and out of that. I call it the writer's haven, many, many times a day, responding to people, cheering them on, you know, addressing their questions if they have any. So people have very soft support to develop a daily spiritual practice of their choosing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have an online international community of people who are doing the same thing, Robert. You know, so it's kind of like a virtual ashram in a sense, except we're in our lives, you know, as they are, but we're bringing this time of profound connection to ourselves, and then we're sharing the experience as is comfortable for us, on any given day with a community of people who are involved in the same kind of self-exploration and discovery. It's such a beautiful experience. People have really amazing and amazingly sweet transformations happen in these 3 weeks.
Yeah, we know the. To me, it seems to me that you know that practice of heart writing, really helps. Would help individuals strengthen that heart connection, because so many times we're living out of our heads, you know, that we sometimes detach from exactly what it is that the heart and the emotions are trying to tell us, you know, and it seems that anything one can do to strengthen that heart connection would be valuable.
You know, you're absolutely right. It does strengthen the heart connection, both with the emotional aspect of the heart, so people become more emotionally aware, their emotional IQ improves, but also they connect with the core of the heart, which is not emotional at all. It's a place of profound peace and equanimity, you know, a oneness experience. And so they start being able to live from a place of having that experience on a regular basis and knowing they can reconnect to it anytime they need to, which is kind of a game changer, you know?
It is very much empowered, very empowering. Well, this has really been a delight, Pamela. We're already at the end of the show. Is there any final words you may want to pass on to listeners, maybe when the start of the next upcoming class that you have for them to maybe look into?
Thank you. Yes, I would love to. We start at the end of January. The next Blessed Boundaries will be, and until then, if anyone wants to, we could arrange a one-on-one session, which I do either on the phone or through Skype, depending upon where people live, and in an individual session, people just talk to me for a couple of minutes, and I listen from a deep space and start hearing where their unhappiness is and where their unclarity is, and asking them questions that help them discover for themselves the solution to the unhappiness that they're experiencing. And I also at the same time do distant healing, and people often, I always suggest when they make the appointment that they give themselves time afterwards, because people often sleep for a little while after we
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's perfect. And again, people can go ahead to your website to find out more details. But I really, again, want to thank you very much for your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat, and I won't be counterintuiting anymore.
Oh, Robert, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Pamela Miles, and we've been talking about Blessed Boundaries. And again, you can find out more about her program by going to myblessedboundaries.com. And also, again, visit her website, pamelamiles.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.